This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for making yourself at home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
So tell us a little bit more. When did you arrive in New Zealand and what made you come here?
Well, I arrived in February 2006, and that was because my ex found a job in New Zealand. And then I was a lawyer in Jordan, but then I left everything and I came with them, with one boy. Then the other three were born here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what?
How old was your
son?
Son?
Yeah.
How old was your son when you guys moved here?
He was 2 years and a half, and four boys. They're all sons.
Oh,
I have no daughter.
How nice! How interesting! And how does it like so far? Like you, I think you've seen New Zealand change over the years also, and your life has changed also. So how does that make you feel? Where are you right now currently in life?
This is really deep question because yes, it has changed a lot comparing to when we were here, when we arrived here. And also the feeling changed and with ups and life and downs of life, sometimes you feel connected, sometimes you feel, I won't say disconnected, but sometimes you feel not supported when you need support, family support, friend support. But overall, I'm still home, doesn't matter what.
So Maha and I have, we're from the same Muslim community.
Yeah.
And we've seen each other. Like, I've been here for the past 3 years and we've seen each other on different events. But interestingly, this is the first time that we are officially talking to one another.
Yeah, I know.
This is our first introduction to...
I saw you from a distance, like in events and everywhere. Sometimes I see some posts, not posts, but in our groups chat and stuff from you. And I always think, this lady is so, she has potential and very active. But we never met. This is the first time, which is really cool.
It's cool. And I think it's so nice that you meet at the radio. And sometimes, I mentioned to Maha, Amna, that it's good to catch up with people at the radio. Sometimes I don't see people for a long time, and then I invite them here, and we catch up, and we talk about things, and it's nice.
Yeah.
It's a place for us to connect.
Yeah, exactly.
So both you are from the same community. Tell me a little bit more. What is the community, and
so
how many times you meet, or...
I'm a Muslim, and as a community, we usually meet in Ramadan to breaking our fast, and then we meet in Eid al-Adha and Eid al-Fitr, and these are our, after Ramadan finishes, there is Eid al-Fitr, and then after the Eid al-Adha.
Ah, okay.
So we meet, and we have family function, and we have fun. For me, I'm I don't go a lot because other people can meet in Fridays and other events, but I'm always busy with my kids and my business, and I'm a bit that's not nice. It's a shame that I didn't go, but
It's quite interesting how at times when you come together as a community on these events, that's when you realize that, we're meeting new people we've never met before, but obviously everybody has their lives, everybody is really occupied with their work, with their kids. But I think that's one occasion when everybody actually makes an effort to come together.
Amazing. Because Amna was saying on the show where she was invited that, you know, they have food and everything.
Yeah.
And she was cooking, biryani for, 30 people or something like that. And I was like, amazing. I would like to be part of this community and share food and everything.
It's very nice events because especially in Ramadan, different communities cook different foods on different days. So we try all these foods and like all these, we see all these traditions and also the dressing.
The dresses. How do you dress ups and everything?
So beautiful. The Pakistani culture always dress nicely and like they have all these colorful stuff. And
at times we make it about ourselves. Like, have to wear the nicest clothes. And it's, I think it's part of the culture as well. I agree with Maha how everybody gets to experience each other's cuisines and each other's cultures and how everybody celebrates Eid differently in their countries, but they bring that essence to New Plymouth. That's even though we might not be such a big community, but it's just fun to be around one another and learn from one another.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, amazing. And you said about clothes, you know, what is there any color in particular? Because I saw Amna dressed for the Pakistan Day, which was amazing. Is there any colors specific for your countries or it's
not for us, not really anything works. Right? Yeah, as long as it has a bling on it and it's like colorful. But it depends on everybody, honestly. Like there's no specific colors or dress that you have to wear. But what about you, Maha? Is it like you guys have to wear specific colors or?
No, not colors. I'm usually red, like we call it tob. That's a black dress with a red or colorful, I don't know the word in English, but stitching kind of thing. So different patterns and different colors, but usually red is a big thing. And we have this we call it hatta. And men and women can put it on their heads because in Jordan it can be really hot in these in these countries, so they put something on the head to protect them from the sun. And over time it became like a cultural thing. And I always wanted to have one, but I didn't, unfortunately, until my husband came to New Zealand 3 months ago and he brought me one. That was on the Africa Day. That was the first time I dressed that way in my life.
Wow, I didn't see you that day.
I saw her there and she looked lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
It's so nice to have this kind of traditions, you know, and I see also with my kids when we dress up and they see colors, like, you know, in Pakistan, you know, this beautiful colors or other countries like India, you know. But in Romania, we have like just, we have colors, but it's a little bit more different. Amazing.
It's always nice with the colors and also the dances that they bring to the country. And we learn from each other's, the moves and the sense of a music.
True.
Amazing. And how is like how is the food in Jordan compare here New Zealand? How was for you when you were already asking this question? I know for everyone it's quite tricky.
Different, very different and tricky, because in Jordan we cook a lot of rice and meat and different dishes. It takes time to get ready. And it's really nice to have the whole family come together to share dinner or lunch. In Jordan, the main one is lunch. It's usually midday, and it's the big one, not the dinner. And I came to New Zealand. I couldn't find the spice. I couldn't find half of things I used to use in Jordan. And then my kids are Kiwis pretty much, so they grow up to actually love the very fast food, the very, very fast food. So over time, I was like, you know, is it worth it, like, spending 4 hours in the kitchen and then no one eats it? Or like, they are, oh, mommy, we need pizza or something. And over time, I started to cook a bit less and less and less. And also busy lifestyle, and no one helps you, because in Jordan, or like, the daughters and the mom and like they come together, they prepare something really nice. But here, when you are by yourself, over time you feel like there are more important stuff to spend time on.
It's quite challenging. I feel that, you know, like I cook very simple now compared with how my mother was cooking in Romania.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I
same.
Miss all the time these traditions.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. And also you feel like, I mean, that suits me mm-hmm. because I used it as an excuse because I'm a really good cook, but I hate staying in the kitchen. I hate the process.
Yeah, me too.
I love it when someone else invites me. Yeah. Like in Jordan, when I go visit Jordan, everyone invites me because I'm visiting them.
Yeah.
I love it. But when it's me having to cook, I hate it. So that was a good excuse for me, to be honest.
Yes.
And I think it kind of changes when you're living independently as well. By independent, I mean like you don't have your whole village or your family with you. And it's just you, your husband and your kids. And it kind of made me realize how we can make our life easy and practical by just making the basics. We don't have to get into too many details. Like at home, so I was making lentils yesterday.
Yeah,
we call it dal. And so once it's a very simple dish and it's really wholesome. And so back home, when you make lentils, you temper it with garlic oil and cumin seeds. Mm-hmm. So it gives a very nice aroma. But for me, I've just given up on it. I can't really do that anymore because I find it very tiresome. Like, what's the point of like doing it? My kids will just eat it anyway. Yeah. But so kind of you sort of start moving away from all these
the
things
way
also.
That you do it the amount, the way you do it, and then you create your simpler way of doing the same dish.
Oh, it's amazing. And it's like how is for you, because we talked about, you know, food and clothes and colors, when you arrived here, how was it for you, like culturally? Or something that was a culture shock, or something that you like, or was challenging for you?
The first thing was the country is not like it, especially at night, not very, like the streets are not very crowded.
Yeah.
So you go at 8 p.m., no one there, and you feel, I am alone in the world. This is how it feels. Like, I have no one here. Because even if you don't know people, you still want to see the shops open and that movement. Because in Jordan, for example, you would go out 2 a.m. and some shops are open like 24/7 and a lot of people there. So that was a big one. And the lack of support, like for example, in Jordan, I feel like at 4 a.m. a bit, like, sorry, p.m. a bit bored. Then I go to my friend's house, hey, I want to drink some coffee, and I don't have to make an appointment for that.
Yeah, or write a text. Yeah. This is also what
And in New Zealand, too, you have to actually make an appointment to see your friend. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a bit isolating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it feels like that, you know, when you have to write all the time. Like I see, you know, I write to my neighbors if the kids can go there. And my husband says, oh, no, just send them. But whenever you send them, then if you don't say anything before, it's not culturally appropriate. Yeah. This is how I feel.
Yeah, I think it's for everybody. So how do you feel about it now? Like, you've lived here for so many years. So are you currently used to this life now? Or do you still miss the fact that I just want to casually go to my friend's house and I wish the shops were still open? Or has it?
I think we adapt somehow. Yeah. So I'm used to it now more than before. It's like, I don't feel. Sometimes I feel it when I need support, when I need someone to talk to, and then I have to wait for a week or something to get that chance. But otherwise, I don't feel. Because I got busy as well. Like, I'm always busy all the time. Yeah. So I don't have time to actually visit people.
Mm.
But I started to. What really brought these things back to me is the arrival of my husband. Because now he's living the same thing. He feels like, oh, there's nothing. I can't do anything. Everyone is asleep by 8. You know, he lives the same things that I had to live years ago. So that brought everything to me. And now I defend, because when he says that, I was like, oh, you know, it's better for your health. And this is how it must be. And all these things. Because you start to defend the new culture, which is now your culture.
Yeah.
Like, New Zealand culture is my culture now. So.
Yeah, and like you said, because we had this chat before, like you see the country again through his eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that he's, you know, struggling, and he's here for 3 months, you said, right? Or
he came in April, so yeah, 3 months.
3 months.
3 to 4 months,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. So for him it's also the similar like you, right? The streets are empty.
The
not
culture
so many
shock.
People to talk with.
Yeah.
And everything. He says everything is expensive and like it's really hard to get things. And
yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you will get used to it. Just give it time.
Yeah.
Because
give
we all
time.
Went through the
yeah.
same thing.
True.
And it's not easy, you know, even though. And I remember when people were, when I was here and everybody said, oh, everything will be fine. And more people were telling me everything will be fine. I got more angry, you know, because it's like, okay, I'm struggling.
Yeah, I still need my time.
Yeah, I need my time. And I, you know, I just want somebody to say, I understand, you know, it's hard. It is
and
hard
you feel
and
it's not
going
to happen when people, it's like the language. I mean, when I came here, I had no English and then everyone were talking around me and I felt I will never, ever be able to be part of a conversation. And they told me, oh, you're going to like that, going to happen, da-da-da-da. But to me, it feels like it felt like it was not going to happen. And this is the same thing now for my husband.
Yes.
It feels like, oh, will I be able to actually like be in a conversation with anyone? And but I said, it's going to happen. Just give it time.
Yeah.
Give it time. And this is what we are lacking. Time and patience.
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 But you're right. It can be really draining emotionally at times. Like, you're right. Mm-hmm. You don't want to hear that it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that even just a simple thing as language, talking in your own language, at times it's like you've, when you're speaking in English and when you switch to your native language or your mother tongue, it's like you're decompressing.
Yeah.
Exactly, right?
I can speak my language now and it feels good. It kind of relaxes you as well.
Yeah, because your language is very subconscious. You don't think.
Yeah.
You don't make any effort. It just comes out.
Mm.
While English or second language is kind of conscious. You are conscious all the time.
Exactly.
And when you are stressed or in a situation where everyone is watching you, you lose the words, you lose, sometimes you can't express yourself.
Yeah. And I think like the other day, walking with some friends, and when I do a walk and I feel very nice, very good with friends of mine, who I also have to talk in English, of course, I tend to start talking in Romanian, you know, because I feel so comfortable, and some words are coming out in Romanian, and I think, oh, well, this I said in Romania. This is happening to you, ladies?
Yeah,
so
it
does. When you feel comfortable, right?
The other day, I was talking to my son and his friends, and suddenly I started to talk in Arabic with his friends. And my son was, hey, Maha, he's English. And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, don't speak Arabic to him. I was like, I did not. I didn't even realize.
exactly right. You don't realize. And this is the good, maybe the good thing that we have to take from it is like we are relaxed. You are getting more relaxed in New Zealand. And for us now it's easier.
Yeah.
But you know, for new people coming, like your husband, it's quite challenging.
It's hard. It is hard. Yeah.
Because
You feel isolated if you can't speak the language because you can't make friends, you can't go out. Yeah, it's isolation, but hopefully it won't take long.
And also there is no men group here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know at the library there is the women group.
Yeah.
How was that for you? Did you integrate when you came here? Did you find your group?
There was a group through the Migrants Connection. In the past, it used to be called something else, not Migrants Connection, but the same organization. They used to do English classes, which was us, like the migrants, with Kiwi ladies who used to speak English with us and support us. And that was a really nice thing. And also I joined the group in the library that like for some time before I got busy. That was two groups I remember. And also I started my own group in the past where I was trying to help Muslim women to blend in the community. So
amazing.
There was the same of the English group, but Muslim with non-Muslim all together come together and support each other's. That also went for a while. The three groups.
And I mean, to make your own group, it's also very good.
Yeah, I loved it.
How did you manage to bring awareness and people come to your group?
I did it through the Migrants Connection. Okay. Gita helped me, and so we used to do it in their building, and I advertised it through our WhatsApp page in the Muslim community. For these ladies, I told my friends as well, and yeah.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. And how long have you done this?
I think, I can't remember, it was not long. It was for a year because then people moved away and yeah, things happened. Then we had COVID because that was I think that was sometime before COVID. Then we had COVID. I went to Jordan. I got stuck for 14 months. And when I came after COVID, that again, like starting all over again. Mm. Yeah.
No, I think, Maha, you need to start this Muslim ladies catch-up thing again.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I think it'll be still quite helpful.
Yeah, maybe something we can plan together.
We can definitely do that.
Right? Yeah, we can plan together.
You are here for a reason, the two of us. Yeah. So obviously, because both of you are very entrepreneurial, you know, and you can start something together.
Yeah.
Because at times, coming back to that language part, within your own country, within your own space, at times you're really confident, you know that everything is okay, but the moment you switch to another language, you start second guessing yourself as well. Whatever I'm going to say, whether it's going to make sense to the other person, I don't end up offending the other person, so you start overthinking things, and that's when the confidence drops, and then you're like, did I say that right? I hope I did not offend them. And so people tend to go in their shells as well. Like, I'd rather not say it. But and some would not even reach out that, okay, so we need some sort of emotional support. I think women like Maha, I'm quite impressed how you've navigated through life. But not everybody would be like that. And I think support really matters.
It's with language, it's about confidence, and sometimes you can't express yourself. Sometimes you have a lot to offer, but because of the language barrier, you can't offer that. And this was one of the ideas I wanted to help Muslim women with. A lot of them have a lot to offer, but because of their language, because of their culture and stereotyping, sometimes they feel like, okay, we better just stay at home and not even trying. Mm. So a lot of them are intelligent and they have potential. And I guess every migrant is the same. They have a lot to offer, but if they can't speak fluently, then they keep it for themselves.
Yeah. Because of afraid of mistakes.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And it makes sense,
and
right? Another country.
Yeah.
And I see also myself, you know, working in an organization, and I'm all surrounded by locals, you know. I'm the only one who has the accent. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel like, oh, okay. And everybody says to me, you know, you have such a cute accent. And Alina, when she talks, and she's so sweet. But in the same time, it's nice that people say that, but it's also like, you're again different, you know, you don't fit in, you're not the same like the others. And I see also my kids now, you know, like my daughter has 10 years old and she doesn't want to be different because this is our nature. Yeah. We want to be the same, and this is like part of our body, you know.
Yeah.
We want to blend in and be the same with the others. But in the same time, we need to be different if we want to change something, right?
Exactly. It's challenging. But I believe sometimes uniqueness and being different is the cool thing.
Mm.
Because if we're all the same, we won't be that creative as community, because we need to bring different ideas and different experiences and different history and background to the mix, so that will create a creative community and like better understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned through years that my differences are my strength, actually. It's what made me.
Wow.
So I started to be really proud about them. I stopped actually check my emails before sending them. I stopped being really cautious about what I'm going to say. It annoys me because I can't express myself to the depth I wanted to, but I still try. And I remember the first time I worked at New Plymouth, it was in this New World supermarket.
Yeah.
And my manager and the owner, brought an email to me and say, hey, see this email and see what is this person trying to say. And I read the email, and I'm really good at guessing.
Yeah.
But I read it. I couldn't guess.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, what on earth is that supposed to mean? I can't get anything out of it. Who was the person who sent it to you? And he said, you. I was like, really? I couldn't read my own email.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, these things used to stop me a lot. But now I feel like, well, okay, it's part of me. It's who I am.
Yeah.
And then I think other people need to spend some time guessing. Mm. So that's okay.
And it's like, it's so brave from you, you know, sharing that and also acknowledge that thing that happened, you know, because it was you, right?
It was me.
And you learn from that. And for you, like, instead of being like, oh, what mistake I made, you know, it's like, was good that I made that mistake, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I'm unique.
Yeah, exactly.
And people will see me as
exactly.
unique.
Yeah. Instead of getting embarrassed, you owned it, that this is who I am, and I'll probably improve from it. But you decided you won't give up on who you truly are.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And some words like embarrassed and impressed, to me, when I came, they were the same. There's no difference. And I remember talking to the HR manager, and I told her, oh, I was embarrassed of the way you did this. Mm. And I meant impressed because she was cool. And I kept saying embarrassed, and the look on her face told me there was something wrong. And I was like, wait a minute. Embarrassed, I mean good. She says, I don't know what you mean, but is it good? I was like, yeah, it's good. And she said, oh, yeah, that's cool then.
The same like with the word excited. I think it's so when you say excited, it's not like you are very happy.
Yeah.
It's something else.
Yeah.
Wow. But isn't it amazing how some people tend to really acknowledge you and accept you the way you are? And I think that's quite liberating. At least I feel quite happy and excited when if I am mumbling or if my English is going down the drain, I know the other person is getting it and they're quite welcoming and they're not pointing it out and they understood what I tried to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they kind of like who you really are. So I think that's quite welcoming and wholesome also when the locals tend to accept you the way you are. And I think they get more excited, like, oh, so you said something like that, where are you from, like, tell us your story.
Exactly.
So I like the point where you said that it's nice to be unique rather than just all of us
being the same. Yeah,
there'll be no conversations, no interactions or
exactly.
connections.
Exactly. And this is one thing I love about New Zealand. It has all these cultures. And that's really unique and good and lovely, because if it's all the same, I mean, in Jordan, for example, we are all the same. That's good. We are supported. I love it. However, that doesn't teach you a lot about other people. We learn about other people from the social media, about the news, and it's not really positive. So that keeps you a bit isolated and you stereotype other people, But having all these cultures actually living with you in the same country is a very rich thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
It is. And you say about uniqueness, right?
Yeah.
And you said that what else was making you feel unique here? Like, besides the language and the culture, and what is something that...
Other stuff, we're like... like personal stuff, like my nature is of being direct, for example. I learned like you have to be direct, so that brings people to you, because we're always scared of like being direct is gonna push people away. But I learned by experience is actually showing your true self, and also vulnerabilities are really two good things. So I never hide these things. Well, I'm vulnerable when I'm vulnerable. I'm direct when I'm direct. For example, I would message someone and they don't come back to me, they don't reply. Instead of assuming, I'm like, hey, I understand why you maybe don't want to talk to me. just tell me if this is the case so I don't keep chasing you.
Exactly.
But if it's not the case and it's you didn't see my message, then yeah, good to know as well.
Mm. Such a brave thing to do, right? It's amazing.
Or sometimes some, because of the language differences, someone would say like something on a group or something. I used to be angry straight away, depending on whatever I get out of it. Then I started to say something, hey, do you mean 1, 2, 3? I need to know. And they go, oh, no, like we just meant da, 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 da. So by saying these things, actually, that brings people more together, because even if they mean it, even if they mean negative, by actually asking them directly, that gives them a chance, because they won't say, yes, I mean it. That gives them a chance to rethink and see how it can be understood. And then they come and say, oh, no, I mean da, 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 da. And you go, oh, yeah, fair enough, etc. So, and vulnerability, because I used to always want to be strong and perceived as a strong, and I hide my vulnerabilities, and that was not good. They're very stressful. And then I started to feel like, okay, my vulnerability is me as well, my strength as well. So I started to show them, if I'm depressed, I'm depressed. If I act like borderline, I'm borderline, it's okay. If I'm like crazy, I'm crazy, you know? Yeah. As long as I'm not hurting other people. Mm. That boundary is important to me. As long as I'm not hurting other people, it's okay to be me. Doesn't matter what.
Amazing.
Love this.
I think you are such an inspiration. Yeah. I could listen to you
thank you.
All the time. And I think maybe you can do a beautiful TEDx speech with that.
Thank you.
And while you were talking, if I can share something that happened to me when I came here. So I had a friend, you know, but I just came for a few weeks. And I thought we are good friends. They had, you know, she also had two kids. I had two kids. And we met quite often. We were neighbors. And then I wrote a message to her, oh, let's meet, blah, blah, blah. And she didn't answer me.
Yeah.
And then I was waiting, you know, because I was also stressed coming in a new country, not having anyone and no friends. And I was talking with my husband, oh, she didn't reply. What should I do? And then I asked her, you know, I reply, I said, oh, everything is okay. She didn't reply. And then next day I was going to... to her, you know, I knocked on her door and I was asking her, is everything okay?
Yeah.
Because I wrote you a message. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, everything is fine. It's just like that. Sometimes I don't answer my text.
How convenient.
Yeah. And I think just for me going there and putting myself in this situation, which was quite embarrassing for me.
Mm.
And I knew in that moment, if I will go there, our friendship maybe will not be, because, the person will think, oh, Alina is a little bit,
clingy,
exactly, right?
Stalker,
yeah. So obviously the relationship ended, but in the same time was good that I put up.
At least you knew, right?
Yeah, and it's different cultures, different...
Different things. Sometimes it's good, sometimes the outcome might be negative. The person maybe actually don't want to know you or don't want to answer or doesn't matter what, but at least you know, because sometimes you spend a lot of energy guessing. We don't know.
Exactly.
So we keep the connection and we keep guessing and thinking of different scenarios, and that's a lot of energy. And I believe like our energy is really precious. Like, why to spend it on things like this?
Yeah.
So just be brave, know the truth.
And then knock on the door.
Yeah,
if it's a rejection,
exactly.
It's a rejection,
that was
right.
That was a good thing.
Yeah. Looking back, I wouldn't do it the same. I would just accept, okay, because I know in New Zealand sometimes you're right, and if somebody doesn't answer, it means they don't want to do anything to do with you. You know. So now I know there is a cultural thing, but then I didn't know.
But you had to go through that in order to learn it.
To learn it, right?
Had you not experienced it, you would not have ever learned it.
Yeah.
And honestly, now that I'm listening to both of you, I used to second guess myself, because I think at times, like, if I've made a mistake and I've realized it, like, even if it's somebody else's mistake also, but I've realized that they won't be the bigger person, I'd rather talk it out, or I'd rather go and message or explain. And I would feel better Like, I've done my part. My intentions were right. I wanted to make this right and not have any sort of friction between us. And that kind of makes you feel better also. Like, you've let it go. Otherwise, you keep overthinking things. Like, what did I do? Where did I go wrong? Yes. And I've realized that that kind of affects your body also.
Yes.
Like, emotionally, you are stressed out. But then it starts affecting your body. And you're, like, always on a, like... on your guard is always up that, okay, if we come across one another, is it going to be, are we going to start fighting or is something going to go wrong? So I think I like your point that it's, you should be vulnerable and you should, is it like wearing your heart on your sleeve? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Let it out, talk it out.
Yeah.
If it works, fine. If it doesn't, that's okay as well.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, we have to serve our values. Because having conflict with someone is better than having inner conflict where you like stop serving your own values just because of different culture or because maybe you don't know the person or whatever it is. So, yeah, serving your value is really important. And even culture sometimes is very personal. You might have people in the same culture, but they actually act differently. Yeah. So it's always good to go and try. And
And I really like what you said, having conflict with somebody is better than having conflict within yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
exactly.
It's a great one. And
this should be our tagline.
And how is for you, like, managing, how is in your country, like, compared with here, on the things that you can say and you can't say? Is it a big difference between New Zealand and Jordan on speaking up?
Maybe the way, because in Jordan, again, because we know each other, we are of the same culture, maybe that makes it a bit easier for us to say things. But again, I think not saying what you believe in is a universal thing. A lot of people, because they don't want to be judged. So whether it's yes or no, they usually keep it for themselves, and they don't want to be judged, and... social image is becoming really a thing, a universal thing. So I think these reasons are, regardless of the culture, people started to act the same everywhere, I believe. Even in Jordan, people started to be like, go with the flow and say yes about things. And sometimes instead of saying no, they don't answer the message and stuff like this. Because we have the social image and social expectations. And that what annoys me, because people are losing who they are because of having to fit or tick the boxes or whatever you call it. So, yeah, I think we're all the same. Jordan, New Zealand, just the same.
Everywhere in the world, right?
Yeah.
So, Maha, you and I are meeting here today. I wanted to just get to know you more. What do you do? Like you said, you're busy now and you're working. So where are you working? What is it that you do?
I had my business since 2017, but then I had to put it on hold for the last 2 years because I had to focus on my kids for some private issues. And then now I'm relaunching my business. I'm looking for an office and I'm doing the marketing all over again and trying to do some workshops. Now I do some supportive groups here and there and some coaching sessions here and there. But, you know, the marketing and business management and all that take a lot of time. And then I have my kids, the schools and activities and doctors and the household and supporting my husband who just came to New Zealand, all this together. A lot. I know. So that keeps me busy all the time.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I managed to sleep at 9. That one thing I'm not going to give up.
To sleep. I heard that 9 is the new midnight. 9 p.m. is a new midnight.
And what time do you wake up?
5.
And you do your working stuff and prepare for the day.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Yeah, I do my prayers and I do some work on the computer, then wake up the kids and our day starts.
Oh, amazing. And tell us a little bit more about your business, because I found it fascinating, and now knowing, you know, your... conflict resolution, which I think is such a healthy way of looking on that, you know. And you said you are a creative coach or a business coach, so you help businesses at the beginning of their journey, or it's a continuum?
I help both. So I help new businesses to actually set up the business and have really strong structure to start. Mm-hmm. And I help businesses with increasing the profit and getting more done without having to invest more in new resources or employees.
Yeah.
So reducing waste, troubleshooting systems, processing workflow, stuff like that, to help them actually get more profit without having to put more money in the business. That for the middle and big businesses, large businesses. And for people, I do life coaching because at the end of the day, businesses are people.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If you know how to coach businesses, you know how to coach people.
Mm.
So I do life coaching because I need my dream is to have a community of happy and productive workforce.
Yeah.
And that's for the very coming, very new generations.
Mm.
To see them happy and productive is really lovely. And this is what I wish to see for the coming 20 years in Taranaki and hopefully whole New Zealand.
Amazing.
Mm.
Oh,
it's
so great. I would love to do that with you, you know, and I have a business to guide me through all the steps because you seem like a very empowerment woman and empowering women and in taking action.
Maha, do you have any upcoming session that people can register to or join in?
I have now, I do some sessions with Taranaki Retreat,
mm-hmm.
and this is cool because it's SF-free, it's voluntary, it's for the community to join, and I can do private ones when I have, if some people want sessions, then I can do private ones,
right.
And I'm thinking of doing something for the Muslim community, actually. They couldn't come to the Taranaki Retreat one because it's on the week.
Okay.
And they do, they work.
Yeah.
So maybe doing something in the weekend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm planning to do this.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yeah.
Amazing now. Yeah, the
look
two
forward
of you connect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But during my business, I try to put all my experiences and education together because I was a lawyer. Then I studied diploma in business and management, then diploma in professional coaching, then mental health and addiction, hypnotherapy, NLP. So
wow,
I tried to put them
amazing.
All together in one business because I love all of them.
Yes.
And people used to perceive business as different from mental health, for example.
Mm. Yeah.
So I love to bring everything together,
and
put everything and help people here and there, individuals and businesses.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's amazing, you know, four kids and already so many things that you did. You are quite a knowledgeable and, I'm so happy to know more about this stuff. You know, how come, from business to hypnotherapy and this part? So did you do that,
How come, sorry?
Hypnotherapy, you said you did?
Yeah.
Did you train and be a hypnotherapist?
Yeah, so the way I use it, I'm not doing, I'm not hypnotherapist, I have a clinic or something, so I'm only specialized on that. Mm-hmm. But the way I use it, I use the basic of it, I apply it as a tool through other sessions. So sometimes it doesn't have to be a full hypnotherapy, but using the power of imagination and change. This is what I focus on people, just activating their imagination. Mm-hmm. Even in business situations, sometimes you need to remove some blocks by actually activating their imagination and help them to see where the block comes from and how to get rid of it. And I create something that suits every client because I believe everyone is different. Again, about uniqueness, everyone is different. So I have to be able to be that's a hard word, spontaneously.
Spontaneous.
That one.
That's a good one. Yeah. We got it.
So to actually, on spot, create a tool. Sometimes clients talk to me and I have to think of a tool now that suits them, not something I already know and it suits other 10 people. That's maybe not for them. So this is how I use the NLP and hypnotherapy in business situation
It's amazing, yeah.
Mm.
I would love to be part of your practice. You can practice on me. Yeah.
That's interesting, well, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and bringing all this together, and especially, like you said, because you're working with you know, with a Muslim community, and maybe trying to do this for your Muslim community,
I think yeah.
it'd be such a great thing, you know, especially the NLP. I really like NLP and how it works.
Yes, so it's very transformational. Yeah,
very transformational, and the way you think and what you think translates to what you do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was driven by my own journey, to be honest, because I had to find answers for myself.
Yeah.
And I had to actually change and improve myself, and I was blocked at some stage. And then I kept studying and learning to fix my own problems. And then I was like, okay, if that helps me, then it should help other people. Mm-hmm. This is why I started to become really interested in this part of that industry, if we call it industry.
It's such a nice feeling when you're able to help yourself first, and you get all the answers, if not all, but most of the answers.
Yeah.
And then you realize that, okay, there'll be more people who can get help from this.
And I think this is how we start, you know, like working ourselves, you know, going through challenging times, and then now doing a course, you know, like same with me, you know, I did life coaching and solution focused coaching, and then you know, applying that to the clients and seeing that it works for me and for the others. And I think when you do this step, it's amazing for the community that you can bring this forward,
and it makes you feel good
that
you help other people.
And how about your family in Jordan? Do you have any siblings or your parents, or sisters?
Yeah, I have four sisters.
Oh, nice.
So I have four sisters and four sons, which is interesting.
You're like number four. I was born on the fourth.
Yeah, I don't know. And also like sisters and, because I don't have brothers, so girls and then boys. but yeah, and I have my mom, my dad and sisters, and we have big family, like all of my cousins and uncles and aunties. We keep in touch all the time. This is what I miss, because any wedding or any celebration, they all come together and celebrate. They just had two celebrations yesterday, and they sent me some videos and stuff, and I'm like, oh, really miss that.
And when you are away, you know, you want to be with your family and celebrate with them and go to weddings and birthday parties and and how often do you
I was going to ask that. No, go ahead.
How often do you go to Jordan, or when did you visit them last time?
Depends. My last time was 2023, and that was to get married, and before it was COVID, when I got stuck for a year and something. And really depends, sometimes every 2 years, sometimes 5 years. Really depend,
And are your boys interested in going to Jordan or learning about the culture there? Or are they pure Kiwis now?
They really want to go because they miss their, they say, we miss your sisters and your parents, and they miss Jordan and the food and everything. Mm-hmm. Just because it's really expensive, they don't go that often. Mm. I mean, I go by myself and it costs me a lot. So if I take everyone, that's a lot. Mm. More than like 10,000 just tickets.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah, my kids are trying now to, I will make an account for them. And I said, you can save some money and we can go to Europe if you
want. That's
because
a good idea.
This is what they want. So I'm doing that now for them and put some money aside to buy tickets.
That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah. So you had a question, I think, right?
It was the same question. Yeah. Like, how often do you visit? But you've been living in New Zealand, and at times, especially for the migrants, I don't know if being pressured is the word, or you consciously make an effort to keep the culture or the religion alive, or for your kids or for yourself. How did that work for you from a Muslim's perspective, like from a Muslimah's perspective? Like,
yeah, Muslim is harder than Jordanian because, or not harder, I mean more important to me than the Jordanian culture.
Mm.
It's really hard because it's very different here.
Yeah.
And especially when your kids are teenagers and they get like friends and they want to try things and live that life. At the beginning, my focus was on actually getting them to do the prayers and the daily routine and all this stuff. And then I noticed it doesn't work that way because they start to shift away with the business, and then you have to remind them, and that makes them a bit like stressed and creates conflict and make it don't like it. Then I started to focus on the why we do what we do. So I explained to them why we do things that way, why it's important to, like, about our values and what are the benefits that they're going to gain out of it, to help them create a better connection with Allah, our God. And then hopefully that's going to lead them to actually, even if they don't do the prayers really well now or just they miss some daily routines here and there, but at the end of the day, one day they will remember all that teaching. And they will keep focused and they will be really good Muslims.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Amna? Did I ask you this question?
Not really. To be honest, for me, I think it's easier practicing Islam here. Religion, generally, anybody, if my perspective, for me, it's easier practicing Islam here for myself and for my kids also, because back home, you've got these different versions of your religion.
Mm-hmm.
Some would agree with what you're practicing, some would completely disagree with what you're practicing. But for me, it was more like, okay, I'm going to start learning for myself first, and then I'm going to help my kids learn it too. But you know how you kind of take it upon yourself that you're the ambassador of your country, or you're the ambassador of your religion. And you have to keep your dignity and respect and your values intact, so that not, if people start questioning you, that means they're questioning everybody. All the Muslim women are like that, or all the Muslim men are like that. So for me, it's a new chapter, new learning process, and I'm actually liking it here. I would tell my parents also that I'm getting more close to my religion here as compared to back home.
Wow.
Like,
yes,
I have
I agree.
Oh, how come? So what has changed here?
I think it's and you know what's interesting, you must have noticed it also. So our religion teaches us to be kind to everybody. Humanity comes first, obviously. You have to be kind to everybody. Judgment does not lie with us, it lies with God. Whether somebody is sinning or whether somebody is a saint, that's not up to the people to judge them, that's up to God. Back home, that's up to people, and then comes God. So they'll judge you first, like, no, you did this, so you're a sinner. Irrespective of if I like Maha covers her head, I don't cover my head, but people would actually judge you on your appearance
also.
I could be practicing religion more, like, I'm not saying Maha doesn't, but it could go anyway, but they would actually judge you on how you look, how you carry yourself, and not knowing that I could be praying five times, giving charity, looking after my parents. Or so even the slightest things can actually earn you so much, but we've kind of lost that essence. And I saw here how people are generous, they're kind. Every time you go for a walk or in the market, people will say, hi, good day to you. And Islam kind of teaches this to us, that you have to be like, say salam to whoever you meet, be kind, smile, because smile is a sunnah.
Is
like,
yeah.
And we don't follow that, whereas everybody here is following it, but they're not Muslims. And I like that this
and
is,
I think that's because also what we talked about at the beginning, when in countries like Jordan and Pakistan, when the culture is the same, it's the same people, the same culture, there becomes something like expectations, like where everyone has to fit and be the same, otherwise you'll get judged. But when you come to a country like New Zealand, where everyone is different, so you actually find for your unique identity and you serve your own values regardless of other people, because everyone is different and differences are expected here. They are not judged. So that, I think that's why it's easier. Yeah,
oh, it's so amazing to hear the both of you. I mean, I'm having so many aha moments, and it's amazing. And I'm so grateful to have both of you in the same room. Obviously, it's a big energy, and it's because both of you are very strong women, and you've gone through a lot in your lives, you know. And I relate to that. You know, sometimes when you come from another country, it's not easy. You know, you're tending to be judged by your, you know, color, accent, you know, what you eat, the way you dress, how your kids are acting in public, you know. There will be a lot of judgment, but I think to keep yourself true to yourself, it's so important.
You know, back home, I think nobody would actually recognize us. Like, what are you doing? Like, who have you become? Because you tend to let go so many things, unlearn so much. And there's so much that you start doing fresh, and that's how your kids are also. So they would be, for them now, I think when we go back home, it'll be more of a cultural shock for them there as compared to here. So
because the kids born here and now they are Kiwis, so when they go there, it's again different language, different culture, different everything. Yes, they love it and they are very much connected, but they can visit. It's really hard for them to live forever, for example. They have to restart again and adapt again to a different stuff.
Yeah, and hopefully, I think what I see, you know, with all the interviews we get, that the world is becoming more global, you know, and people are being more adaptive. And they like more change. So change is the new constant, right? So we are going into that, I feel. Wow, amazing. We had a last question for you, but I don't know if we still have time for it.
You can quickly do it.
Just let us know if there is a new person in New Zealand or somewhere in another country, what would you advise them in order to make themselves at home? What would you tell them?
I would say just discover who you are first. Be yourself. You need to know who you are, and then to actually try to fit in the community. Because if you do the opposite, try to fit first, you will lose who you are. If you're not aware of who you are, then you will get a lot of mental health, emotional problems, a lot of sadness, depression, because you don't know who you are. You are lost, right?
Exactly.
So I would say take the opportunity that you are very isolated, you are alone, and explore yourself. Once you find it, try to fit in.
Wow, amazing. What a beautiful ending. I will take that and I will record that, and also we'll write that on our page. I think it's a great thing, and nobody till now was going back to themselves. So I think it's an important thing to go back to who you really are.
Thank you,
Maha.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you,
Anna.
It was
really cool.
Thank you.
And hopefully, Amna, see you next time, same time, same place.
Yes, definitely. See you.
And see you in the community. I'm sure we will
we'll
do a lot
you.
Of
it was lovely catching up with
meet.
You. Yeah, we must.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.